Happy Tuesday, everybody. I am your fill-in host, Christina Long, on the desk for Matt Jones, who is on his way to North Little Rock tonight for baseball against Arkansas Pine Bluff. And I will also be back tomorrow to do a little bit of softball while Matt recovers from a late night coming back from Little Rock. But today on the show, we're going to talk with Tom Murphy about some Razorback football. And before we get started, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, and they are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas and looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can look no further than Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can visit them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. And we also want to thank our friends at Eglin's Best. When it comes to game day, you want the best in your lineup, and that includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need with 6 times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit them at eglin'sbest.com. And we thank them and Bentonville Glass for their support of our show. Tom, thanks so much for coming in today. We have Razorback football practice this afternoon, moved actually to 5:30, so it's a little bit later than usual. I don't know if you saw that. So we've got a little bit later start, but we're kind of winding down a little bit. They'll have some closed practices next week that we won't get to see leading up to the spring game. But something that's been kind of on my mind, I've been talking with other reporters. Ethan Westerman and I were talking over the weekend, just off microphone, about what we feel like we've kind of learned about this team. And I think what I have found is that it is hard for me. I feel like I still don't have a good grasp on this team. And I think some of that is how much new there is, how much turnover. But at the same time, Arkansas has had a lot of new guys before. This is not the first time they've had a high number of new faces. I honestly don't remember if this is, I think this is more than before, than the last couple of years under Pittman, but it's not like they only had a handful before. We were learning about all new names, all new faces, all new numbers for a while. And so I think it's less that and more just, I think it's harder for me to tell who is good. I think I have a good handle on who they like and who might start, but how it's actually going to go, I'm not so sure. Do you feel like the same way?
I do, and there's so much uncertainty. I think as journalists, we like to know about certainties. And because there's so much newness on this squad, and it's not just head coach and all, you know, basically every assistant coach except Morgan Turner, but it's quarterback. You know, if Taylen Green was back with this team, we'd know more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, KJ Jackson's opportunities have been so limited. We have scant information. AJ Hill the same. And by the way, I'm going to go ahead. I did this the last time I did with Matt. I'm going to issue a mea culpa to you because you presented the question, is who's in the lead at quarterback? Is it KJ Jackson's position to lose? And I was like, I think it's a battle, and it's still a battle. But I think KJ Jackson, from what we've seen, clearly is ahead. But let's take this, say, 10 years ago. And we know they have, like, a returning, a couple of receivers, a couple of offensive linemen, Quincy Rhodes, Bradley Shaw, and one safety. You'd say, oh, this team is in trouble. You know, they're replacing so many people. But now, that's just so modern day that we've learned to accept that you could have that many changes and still be a quality team. You know, Indiana built itself upon a lot of James Madison transfers and some other portal guys, and then a great quarterback in Fernando Mendoza. So other teams see that blueprint and understand if you supplement yourself in the trenches, get really good players and some depth, you get a great quarterback and you've got a good system and scheme, you have a chance. And so, yes, I think there are so many unknowns. But I also think they've upgraded the talent and number at defensive line, maybe only marginally, not I don't think to a great extent, to be better. O-line, you know, we'll have to wait and see, but they've had some big bodies in there. Will Sutton Smith and Braylon Russell combine to be as productive and as, you know, as good as Mike Washington was? I don't know. It's going to be hard because Mike Washington had a hell of a year. And so a lot of it's going to wind down, come down to quarterback play and whether or not KJ Jackson and AJ Hill, the combo, is ready to produce and take the heat, take the pressures they're going to see and deliver and make teams pay if they blitz them. To win games, and that's going to be a huge question for this team.
I think that's one of the big things is having a new quarterback. But honestly, even the year Taylen Green was new, I don't really think I've quite felt this way. I mean, there's always going to be a certain amount of wait and see, right? And I don't think Taylen Green got here and we were like, necessarily, this guy's going to light the world on fire. I don't think we thought he was bad, but I think we had some questions because of how it had gone at Boise State and the fact that he had basically lost his starting job to a freshman. And so we had some pause, but I think just watching him in practice, you know, you saw the vision, you saw the athleticism, you saw the size, you saw the running ability. And I think with KJ Jackson, it's not necessarily that I don't think he's good. I just am not ready to say how good I think he can be in a full SEC schedule. I just don't know.
And I think we would be unwise to say that we do know.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Green. He got matched with, and you can't lose sight of this, he got matched with Bobby Petrino, a guy who is still very much near the top of his game. Now, his systems are very complex, and I think in some ways Talen might have struggled with all the complexities, all the reads. He dealt with Bobby Petrino's reactions to the mistakes he made in it, but that was a pretty good pairing. And the numbers, and Matt and I had a big argument about the total offense numbers. His first season, they were number 10 in the country. Now, it didn't necessarily equate to points, but still the numbers were there. And so with KJ, you're working with a system that it's an RPO system. We haven't really seen him run a lot. He did a little bit. I think he had a touchdown run against Texas. So we've seen just a little bit. But the RPO game adds a dynamic that until you see it in a game, you don't know how much quarterback running forces the defense to do other things, gives you options when you make the read and the mesh with the running back and then the quick passing game. So what this looks like on the field, the quick passing, who he can trust at receiver, is all still to be told. But I think they feel fairly confident with the amount of personnel they have working around those guys. And if those guys can understand the system, make the right reads and decisions, it could work out fairly well.
Receiver is another one where I'm going to put you kind of on the spot. Do you think they've upgraded at receiver or downgraded or not sure yet? Because I really can't tell. I mean, you get your Chris Marshall that slots in as your outside guy. Great. Lot of potential there. I don't know how, I don't know if he's going to totally light it up. I think he's going to be that new Omega Blake, basically, that outside guy. How well is it going to go? I don't know.
I think I agree with you. We don't know this. To be on the spot, I would say maybe same graded from last year. But think about 2 years ago when you had two guys at the very top, Andrew Armstrong, who had all the huge numbers, and then a guy who got underutilized in Isaac Tesla. And then Tyrone Broden was the third, and he didn't have a great year. And then you had C.J. Brown and a couple of other guys floating around. But, I mean, Raylan Sharp was a good addition last year to Blake. Should they equate to those? I think so. As long as the system allows the completion percentage to be okay, I think CeCe is going to be a good, solid catcher. Where I think we're going to have to see if they can do it is speed. Can they force the safeties to honor their speed and threaten enough downfield to keep them honest? Who would do that? I mean, it doesn't look like Jelani Watkins, is going to be here anytime soon. So we'll see. But could Hawkins be,
yeah,
be a speed guy?
I don't feel like I have a read on him at all. I haven't really watched him enough in practice. I feel like I haven't felt him, Sam Pittman would always use that. Like, I've felt this guy at practice. I haven't really felt Jamari Hawkins. Doesn't mean I don't think he's going to be good. I just haven't really, he hasn't like popped to me yet. I don't know.
If you ask me who's going to be at the top of the core, I think C.J. Brown, CeCe, Marshall.
I think Hawkins is probably in there.
I think Hawkins is in that top four mix. And then Donovan Foppel, mm-hmm, the New Mexico State, could be a good slot guy. So I'm not sure if they have top-end speed, but I do think they have guys. And then Antonio Jordan, if he ever can understand the system and the checks that you need, he might not run the greatest routes yet and understand everything, but you can throw a 50-50 ball to him and he's got a chance to catch it because he's got the catch radius and the skills to get up. We've seen that already. And so we've listed six guys maybe. Courtney Crutchfield, we haven't talked about. He's got to bring his game to another level. But there's seven. That's probably your travel squad unless someone else can break out of the mix, or Monte Harrison or somebody.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Crutchfield? Because I know he's one of those guys. I kind of lump him together with Antonio Jordan. And, he's an in-state guy that people want to see succeed,
yes,
but hasn't gotten there yet. It's different than Antonio Jordan because Crutchfield went to Missouri, came here, was not in good shape, wasn't up to par basically last year. Different situation, obviously, than Antonio Jordan coming in as a true freshman and, having all that size, having the frame that everybody's excited about, having an injury, that kind of thing. Different situations, but both guys that I feel like for the last 2 years we've been looking at and going, what's gonna happen there? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I asked Silverfield about Crutchfield early in spring and basically kind of asked, what has he shown you? What do you want to see from him? And it was kind of a similar vibe where it was basically like, he needs consistency. He needs to work hard. He needs to, kind of put his head down and keep going. And right. And I'm interested if you feel like he's shown some improvement over last year or what you think.
I think some. And then the word we got from Larry Smith, the receivers coach, if I remember it right, it could have been from Silverfield, was maturity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about how important do you treat the game?
Mm-hmm.
And the coaches can see, and Ishmael Cisse, taking great notes, cares about the game. And that's the kind of thing Courtney Crutchfield, I think, is starting to show more. But it's all about how invested are you into becoming a great player and doing the things it takes off the field. And I think there's been improvement in that. But, I think back to one catch he made at LSU. It was a sideline catch. I think it was one-handed, like falling down out of bounds and a toe touch all at once. He made the catch, and it set them up right before halftime to get a touchdown. So we know the potential is there for him if all the other stuff, all the things about intelligence, the checks you need to make with the quarterback to get open, to read the defense, and go the audibles. So I think the talent is there. And I wanted to say, if they had scored a touchdown right before halftime against LSU, who knows? It could have made the difference in that game. They did not capitalize. I think Taylor ended up throwing an interception.
Mm-hmm. That probably.
the great right. cornerback they got. They tested him, and he picked him off. Mm-hmm. Delane, whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's there, but he's got to show – I want to get to the front of the line. That's another thing in practice is he's kind of tended to go to the back of the line mm-hmm. and stuff. And it's the alpha type personalities. Oh, Blake put himself at the front of the mm-hmm. line. We've seen Jamari Hawkins do that.
Yeah.
He knows the system. I'm going to push to the front of the line. C.J. Brown has done that. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he can like, hey, I'm going to cut in front of all you guys, but you got to show the willingness to want to do that.
Right. I've been kind of partial to CeCe because we had talked to him last year when he first transferred here. We did a magazine, we did some photos with some of the new receivers, and he was one of them. He was just really good to talk to, so I've always just kind of liked him because he seems like a good kid. But I think I've also just been so curious about what he's going to be able to do since we just never got to see it. And you've got a story on Whole Hog Sports today on our site about him and kind of about how he's ready to break out. I wasn't there when he spoke the other day in the press conference room, but what did you kind of learn from him?
Thanks for referencing the story. You know what? It turned out to be a good one because I looked back and saw, Ryan Silverfield had talked about him a little more in depth,
mm-hmm.
about his maturity and the want to. And then Larry Smith had gone on and on about him, extolled his virtues. Now, CeCe's a fast talker, and he says a lot of words. And so you kind of have to listen to it again. But anyway, that's a side subject. But I think he cares. And as Larry Smith pointed out, he's smart. He enrolled at Stanford to start his career. You got to be pretty smart. And you could just see the care factor was with him. And the fact that when he found out that the wrist injury, because he didn't know, like, oh, I hurt my wrist. And then they get in and they see, I think it ended up being ligaments, season ending. He said he was in his room and he cried. Mm-hmm. And it's always an emotional hurdle you have to get over coming back from injury. And he got a lot of help from Monte Harrison, a lot of help from C.J. Brown. And that turned out to be a much better story than when I first said, I'm going to write this. And then you dig in like, oh, yeah, good quote. The coaches like him. The kid's going to have a chance.
You mentioned earlier you think they've upgraded on the defensive line. Not necessarily, totally game-changing way, but maybe a little bit better, have a little bit more depth. I agree, but they're still my concern. Like, I do think depth is better. I still don't think it's good. And I'm very interested because just besides Quincy Rhodes, I just don't know. I mean, Hunter Osborne, I think at the defensive tackle spot is really intriguing. Another guy that was just great to talk to. So I'm a little bit partial toward him too, but what is David Oki going to bring to the table? I'm just not sure. And so what else do you see defensive line wise that's reason for hope or maybe that's giving you pause?
I know the feeling. And it's tentative optimism mm-hmm. that they've upgraded, not total numbers, but it starts with, and I was going to bring this up before you mentioned Oki, but it starts with Oki. He's on the nose. Can he tie up blockers the way they need him to? Is he big enough to do that? Because that's a key part of it all. It gets kind of lost. you know, Gaffard and Ball did not have great numbers last year. They tied up blockers to a decent extent. And I also think Cam Ball was playing through the elbow problem and just sucked it up and did it. But Oki's a big deal. I think Hunter Osborne is key. They can't afford really any injuries out of these guys, or then it doesn't get good fast. But I think guys like Carlin Jones, Trajan Odom, who've been at other places, who just hadn't gotten a lot of chances, are going to get opportunities because you're going to need them. And honestly, they've got to scheme up ways to help Rhodes get one-to-one to unleash his potential. And then the jack position really comes into this. We haven't seen how it all really fits together, how much the jack is going to, you know, there's certain things you do when you have a jack that force the offense to respond to that. But then there's other things the offense can do that make you have to respond to having bigger guys up front. I mean, if you've got guys, you know, Charlie Collins size, Jamonte Waller size, guards can get to them and move them. And so it's going to be a game of checkers when you're running a three-man front. But it's the Carlin Joneses, the Trajan Odoms. I'm leaving somebody out here, too, that who I think are going to have to come in handy. Sims is who I'm leaving out. He's the one. I've seen him flash a few times in practice, and that's kind of what led to my statement. I think they might be. Sims is a key guy. What they talked about with him the other day was his ability to go four, five, six-play segments out on the field and not get tired. So they got to work on that. But tentative optimism that they might be okay there.
And Sims came in from Oregon, but how much did he play at Oregon? I don't remember off the top of my head. I don't think he did much.
It's the same with Jones.
Yeah. But he's pretty – is he younger? He's pretty – he's a redshirt sophomore. So, yeah, he hasn't been around that long. But, yeah, it's one of those where, yeah, we'll see, you know, once they're actually really tested what it's going to look like.
And the names we're leaving off because they got to keep getting better. The guys who hung around, Caleb Bell, Reginald Vaughn, Johnson, Keandre Johnson – can they keep improving? Because to me, that's the key to having a sustainable system is that your young guys that you kept keep getting better, challenge your positions. Can Vaughn, Johnson, Bell make moves and make the whole position group better?
This is just a difficult team to get a read on right now with all that's new. And I don't think that has to be a bad thing. I don't think that has to mean that it's not going to be good. It's different than what we've seen the last couple of years. I mean, last year, Ethan and I were talking about this yesterday, you know, last year you had more known quantities. You had, you know, Ethan made the point when we were talking yesterday about, you know, who on this year's team is going to be, you know, a preseason all-SEC guy. Quincy Rhodes?
Xavier Story, maybe.
Well, from last year, yeah. But so last year, and I went and checked. Last year, actually, the only two they had were Fernando Carmona and Cam Ball, actually, was third team. And so, which was a little bit surprising to me because I would have thought maybe Story got in there or, you know, I was a little bit surprised to see that. But, you know, I just think all these guys, it's just so much unknown. Yeah. Even with, you know, some returners, it's just been difficult to say.
What we know right now is that Rhodes is probably about the only guy I can think of that would merit first, second, or third team preseason all-SEC consideration because of all that. By this time last spring, we knew Mike Washington. The coaches loved him, his work ethic. We knew Mike Washington was on target to have a great year.
And I think Sutton Smith is good. I don't know if he's going to be Mike Washington. But I don't know if they need him to be. I don't know, you know, when you have Braylon Russell, who is apparent, you know, who has gotten better, he's taken another step forward, which he has pretty much each year. Yep. Maybe they don't necessarily need the second coming of Mike Washington. Maybe they just need those guys to combine to be, you know, he gives you a different look. So I don't know. But I think he's going to be good. But again, it's another question of how good.
Right. Well, Russell's body changed. He's lost weight. So his seriousness, his maturity has gone up another level. He wants to be. Because honestly, it was Mike Washington 1A and Braylon got playing time, but it just, I think in this situation with Sutton Smith, who's not as big and durable for the between the tackle stuff, that you're going to see more Braylon Russell. The key question is, because you really need three in the modern SEC, who's that third guy going to be? Is it going to be Jasper Parker, Cam Settles, or, you know, even the new guy, TJ Hodges, might have a chance. So, did they upgrade at running back? That's a question mark. Because Washington was so good for them.
They might be deeper, maybe, or just have better overall options. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're necessarily going to see, the next Mike Washington here. But again, they might not need it. So that's why it's been difficult to kind of get a read. And so with that, the other question I kind of think of is what does a good first year look like? Because we all know, and we say this every year because it is true every year, their schedule is hard. It is going to be tough to find, six wins here. Do you need six wins in year one? I kind of feel like you do. I think they want that as a bare minimum, but it's going to be really hard on this schedule.
It really is. And whoever got this job from the candidates,
anybody.
It was going to be tough. I think one thing you just can't weigh, to use Silverfield's term itself, it's all in. And how much does that mean when you're driving the ball at Ole Miss with less than two minutes to play, and if you score 7 points there and run the clock down, you could win the game against Ole Miss, the team that went the farthest of any in the conference. Mm-hmm. Now, admittedly, they were still growing. It was Trinidad Chambliss' first start. But that's how close Arkansas was. And so if you can get the buy-in factor, find things that help you move the ball, play a little bit better defensively, get off the field a few more times, and then slash your turnover margin. So if you're a coaching staff, you look at that from that standpoint. We slash our turnover margin. We stay on the field. All these things add up to having a chance to go to Utah in week two and winning a game. And there's so much pivoting on that game, or hinging on if you show well, if you have a chance to win the game, what that can mean for you. Six wins, I think, would be a really good season for them. Mm-hmm. Four or five look more feasible to me right now.
How do you think we feel sitting here at the end of the season if they get four or five? We as observers, how do you think fans feel too?
I think we feel like that was probably about what we expected. Mm-hmm. If they won six or more, I think it's, wow, that was an impressive showing, because you've upset somebody along the way. Mississippi State is not on your schedule. Honestly, I'm not sure I can name all nine conference games right now.
I have them in front of me.
But it's such a burdensome schedule.
It is really hard. I mean, I guess I don't really know what Vanderbilt's going to be post Diego Pavia.
And they have him at home, right?
I don't remember that. So I don't know. That's another thing. Other teams are actually at Vanderbilt. There's other teams that are kind of. I mean, even Utah. Utah doesn't have Kyle Whittingham anymore.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of the new guy. I don't really know a lot about him. He was their coach in waiting. That's really all I know. So I would guess he's kind of running a similar idea. They'll have a similar identity to what they've had. But what does that look like? I don't know how many guys left and went to Michigan or went elsewhere. I don't know. So are they going to be the same Utah we've seen, that really, really tough team that we've seen for a while? I don't know. Do they take a step back? We'll have to see. And then, their road games are hard. They're at A&M. They're at Auburn. They're at Texas. Those are tough. I mean, South Carolina, they're a little bit of a question mark.
Yep.
They haven't been really great. So that's what's Missouri going to be now? I don't know. So there's winnable games here, and it's another one of those where I remember last year we were sitting and looking at the schedule, and there were games that did not look winnable, but then as the season played out, all of a sudden you were going, oh, actually, that's an opportunity. Because teams just weren't what we thought they were going to be. And so we're definitely going to see that again. We're talking about how Arkansas, we don't know what to make of them.
Right.
A lot of these teams might not be quite what we think. But it's not easy. And I think, I think that's why I'm so, and I mention this all the time, I'm so interested in the fact that Silverfield, day one said this is not going to be a slow build. Like, we're going to win now. And I'm so interested what that means to him. What does that mean? Does that mean six wins in year one? Does that mean, and he talked about how bowl eligibility, they want that, but like they want that to be the floor. Do they want that to be the floor in year one? Because that is a big deal. And I don't think it's a bad thing to set high goals. And I don't think he obviously is not somebody that's going to shy away from doing that. And I honestly like that. I think that's a good approach. But what I'm curious, when the staff thinks about this year, what is enough for them in the first year?
Yeah, you have to be very careful not to overpromise. Mm-hmm. He said a couple of things like, we're going to have the greatest coaching staff, and we're going to win games. We're going to win a lot of games.
But
and
how
so,
many?
That's right. You didn't put a definition on
no.
that. And I don't know if you want to be pinned down.
No, you definitely don't. No. I don't. I wouldn't have expected him to give us a win total for year one. But but as we think about it and as we look at the calendar, it's what is a good year one? I think it also depends how you look in those losses. I mean, we've talked about close losses a whole lot the last few years with Sam Pittman, and there were times, you know, it was so funny how when Petrino took over, we would look at close losses and think of them in a positive light, and then we would, you know, look at close losses under Pittman when things were started to kind of go downhill and those were bad. Yeah. So does a close loss in year one under Silverfield, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Everything, every year finds its own identity. You know, mm-hmm. the Vanderbilt rises up, yeah. Indiana rises up. In Arkansas, you can't put to that level yet because we haven't seen enough to do that. But when you look at last year, you wouldn't have thought, oh, you know, A&M, the LSU game, there was a bunch of games on that schedule that they won't have much of a chance. The mm-hmm. Texas game, which, you know, that was one of their bigger losses was Texas. But they had a chance at Tennessee when you would have given them none. But they had a chance. And so if you're Ryan Silverfield and you look at this like, well, they had a chance in that game. If we can cut our turnover margin, all those things I mentioned a moment ago, you give yourself a chance. And so the Utah game, to me, looms very large in week two. If you can look good and give yourself a chance there, win the turnover margin. And then the conference season is just going to play out the way it does in the SEC. It's going to be crazy. They might not be favored in any game. If the South Carolina game is here, they don't get off to a great start, they might be favored against South Carolina. I can't think of a game. Maybe the Mississippi State game last year. Mm-hmm. But frankly, they should have won the Mississippi State game. And nothing against Ryan Silverfield and his staff. They should have beat Memphis. That was an indication the team, yep. like, it wasn't all together.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for Mike Washington in his one bad moment, mm-hmm. when you're basically trying to decide how you want to win the game. Do you want to win the game with a field goal, make them use all their timeouts, leave a little time on the clock, or do you want to try to push it in and score a touchdown when that happened? And Memphis did the things. And so, in a way, it gives you some hope. Memphis's team, with 70 newcomers, did the things it took to win that game. So maybe there's that missing element that they can impose on this team that makes them win.
That Utah game is especially key because who comes to Fayetteville the week after? It's Georgia. So depending on how that – even if you lose to Utah – if it is a if you get some moral victories, maybe the vibes are okay going into Georgia. But you need that too, because it's your first real test, and then you have, you know, probably your hardest game of the year right after that. Maybe, you know, put Texas up there with them later in the season. But yeah, it's always a tough schedule. And so it's always, sometimes I hesitate to do the schedule thing, because there's never a year where we're looking at Arkansas's schedule and going, oh, this one looks good.
I know.
It's always like that. But I do think, you know, I'm so interested what they feel internally is the goal or is good. And maybe they don't even have a particular number in mind. Maybe that's not how they go about it. But I will be, you know, tracking how, you know, those kind of campaign promises and then what it looks like here in this first year is going to be really interesting.
Well, my quick wrap on the subject is this. I think the coaches are all invested in how we improve from practice to practice in the spring. We as journalists, we cover the practices, but then we also do things like this and we speculate and then we go into the what ifs. I think their nose is to the grindstone and they're like, we're going to be a better team. We're going to be a unified team. We're going to cut down our turnover margins, give our quarterbacks the opportunity to make good decisions to move the ball down the field, and staying healthy is going to be huge for them.
Yeah.
It's so huge for them. But that's what they're invested in right now, I would think.
Anything in particular you're going to look at practice today?
Since I'm going to be writing about the star position coming up, mm-hmm. or excuse me, the jack position, I'm going to put an eye to Charlie Collins and Waller and Steven Soles today and, you know, linebacker spot. So it's kind of the same mode with those positions. I'll keep a good eye on those today.
And we'll get to hear from the coordinators, both offense and defense, next week, which we haven't talked to them since spring practice started. So I'll be very interested to hear kind of what they think about, you know, as spring ball winds down, what they've seen, you know, now that they've actually gotten to know their own team a little bit.
Yeah, it's been enjoyable talking to all the assistants. All of them, I think, have pretty good persona. You can see how they relate to the players. Mm-hmm. And I think he has a good staff in place. But the coordinators, to me, that's always really important, key interviews to have. And I know a question you can ask them. How many wins do you think you guys are going to get next year?
Give me the number. Make the promise now so that we can yell at you later. but it has been. I've liked talking to the assistants too. I've really liked watching Jeff Myers, the offensive line coach, at practice. I've enjoyed kind of watching them and listening to how he instructs. Yeah. He's very smart. I like kind of how he talks to them. But it's been cool to get to know some of those guys and some of these new players, you know, as they bring guys through the media room. That's kind of what this spring season's for.
I like
for.
The coaching staff. Mm-hmm. I like the way we've seen them relate to players, and I like the way they've related to us.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thanks so much for coming in to talk a little football. We'll be out at practice later. We've got all kinds of football coverage on WholeHogSports.com. Looking forward to the spring game. And pretty soon we'll be talking about, you know, the actual season before too long. I realized recently it's really starting to creep up on us.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. And we will be back here tomorrow.